these different projects have sort of come out of different moments and feelings and tides that I've felt in sort of the community of humans that I communicate with. And I think there's really something to that, like doing things that help people feel a little bit more seen and heard in the world. I think that's been a big part of what I do.
Hi, and welcome to episode 7 of the Mother of Reinvention show. I'm Megan Francis, your host, and I'm here to share stories of resilience, courage, and reinvention with you for whatever you're facing, whether it's a career pivot, a new health or wellness journey, changing relationships, or maybe you're just trying to figure out what's next as your kids get older. Whatever changes you're dealing with, I'm here to share inspiring interviews with other mothers of reinvention, as well as my thoughts on how to face what's next with more adventure and courage. My guest today is Christine Coe. She's an author, speaker, podcaster, and creative director, among many other things. Christine has always seemed to me like a bit of a Renaissance woman. There's not much this woman can't do, and mind you, she seems to do it all well. She's run the website bostonmamas.com since the early 2000s. She co-authored the book Minimalist Parenting in 2013 and has co-hosted the podcast Edit Your Life with our mutual friend Asha Dornfest since 2015. She runs several businesses, including Brave New World Designs, an advocacy-oriented design company she started with her husband, Jonathan. Christine has recently been making quite a splash in the editorial world, publishing prominent stories in the Washington Post and the Boston Globe magazine in just the past few months. Christine, it so happens, also has her PhD and is therefore, in fact, Dr. Coe. And did I mention she also bakes gorgeous cakes and has a prolific Instagram feed? Now, I'm not trying to make all the people listening to this episode feel inferior by rattling off a list of Christine's accomplishments. It's hard, though, because it's so easy to look at people like Christine who have so much going on and think, wow, like, I can't keep up with that. But here's where I share a story about the first time I spoke to Christine in real life. We were at a conference, and it was probably 2008, 2009, something like that. And I have to tell you that even though I was a published author and had been blogging since the early 2000s, it took me a while to find my stride at those social media conferences and early blogger conferences. I really felt like those other women just had their stuff together and they were doing such cool things. And even though overwhelmingly they were really kind and welcoming, there was just something about the whole scene that made me feel a little bit like an awkward seventh grader, hoping I didn't have, you know, like dandruff on my turtleneck sweater, right? So I'm walking down a mostly empty hall when I spot this gorgeous, stylish woman. And I thought, oh, that's Christine Coe. But then she did a double take, stopped in her tracks, and yelled, "Megan effing Francis," down the hall at me. And I was like, what? How does Christine Coe recognize me? She then chased me down the hall and said some flattering things about my work. And I was really pleased, but just mostly kind of confused. I think it took me a few years to get it. So outwardly, I had a lot going on too. It did seem impressive to anybody who wasn't me. And Christine also has so much going on. It's impressive to everyone, but maybe not so much to her. When you're the one in the driver's seat, it's always easy to lose sight of how much ground you've covered and to focus way too much on where everyone else has been or where they're going. I'm sharing this story because one of the themes of the conversation you're about to hear is that feeling of self-doubt, of wondering whether what you're doing has value, is just so incredibly common, regardless of where you're starting from or what you've accomplished. Another big through line in this discussion is the importance of being vulnerable enough to put yourself out there and let your friends and connections know when you're looking for new opportunities or experiences. I think once you've reached a certain stage of life or career, it can feel almost like shameful to ask friends for help because you almost feel like you should have earned those opportunities by now, like they should just come to you magically, right? But as Christine learned this year when she decided to make publishing a bigger focus than she'd previously made time for, people don't always know you're looking for those opportunities. And they don't always know you could use a connection or a helping hand. You have to ask, and there's just no shame in asking your friends to hook you up or make referrals. It doesn't mean you couldn't have gotten there on your own eventually, but it just means you're leaning in on your community to help ease the path. And that's really what we're all here for. Spoiler alert, once Christine asked friends to give her a hand with some connections, she found that that network plus her talents and skills and experience got her where she wanted to go a lot faster than any of those things could have on its own. I know you're going to love this conversation with Christine Coe, and we're going to get to it really soon. But first, I want to talk about our sponsor, PrepDish. PrepDish is a subscription meal planning and menu service that makes it really easy to plan and prep meals for the whole week all at once. Every week, founder and dietitian Allison sends you 4 complete menus. That's keto, paleo, gluten-free, and their new super fast menus, and they just come right to your email along with recipes and a grocery list. The idea is that you prep the whole week's worth of meals at once, and then when you're ready to make dinner, you just pull out the ingredients already prepped and ready to go, and you're on your way. The meals are delicious, and I love how easily they come together when I'm ready to get dinner on the table. Yesterday, I tried the keto chicken fried rice, and wow, it really tasted like the real thing, but way fewer carbs if you're counting them. For a free two-week trial, go to prepdish.com/more. That's M-O-R. Again, just head to prepdish.com/M-O-R, M-O-R for Mother of Reinvention, to try Prep Dish free for 2 weeks. Okay, let's get into my conversation with Christine Coe. Hey, Christine, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Oh, hi, Megan. It's hi. Always such a joy to hear your voice. So thanks for having me.
I'm so excited to have you here because in the internet terms, we go pretty far back, like as far as how far back the internet goes and the world that we inhabit in digital content and going way back, blogging and social media. But I have always had my eye on you as someone who just seems to have so many irons in the fire, so many things going on. You are a true Renaissance woman, Christine Coe. I hope you know that.
I don't know about that, but yeah. But when you were talking about us going back a ways, I think we met each other on Twitter.
probably
I think that's
did.
Where it first went down. I know.
I think you're probably right. That was such a great like watering hole back in, like, I'm thinking like 2008, 2009, when it was so active and fun. And you were really able to connect and network with people in a way that I think would be really hard to do on there now. But a little golden phase for us.
Yeah, for sure.
But for you to even get into this world of internet careers that we both inhabit, you actually had a big pivot years ago. So talk about that, like where you came from and how you transitioned to where you are now.
Yeah, well, so I always have to start by saying that I was actually not a very good like secondary school student, like middle and high school.
I was awful,
actually kind of terrible.
Raising my hand,
so
me too.
I was terrible. Yeah. And I didn't really find my like feet as a, I'm using air quotes, like smart person until I was in college. And then I played music. I was a violinist, like, you know, many good Korean kids. And I had discovered this link between, there was a whole field of music and psychology, which totally fascinated me. So I ended up, you know, following that thread and taking a path into academia that took me through a master's and then a PhD and then a very fancy sounding postdoctoral fellowship, which is like more training before you get your faculty job.
Okay.
And I mean, it couldn't get fancier than what I had. I had a triple appointment at Mass General Hospital, MIT, and Harvard Medical School. I mean, it was really like cream of the crop.
That's the trifecta right there, right? I mean,
it was the trifecta. I mean, especially in Boston, it's nuts. And so, you know, but I was there and I was totally miserable. It was awful. And, you know, more importantly, like many people who I hear about transitioning, you know, a real pivotal point was having a kid. You know, I became pregnant with my first daughter when I was a postdoc and my dad got very sick. And it just really forced me to reevaluate and think, wow, if I'm going to spend time away, because I've always loved working, I love working and doing things. And I knew, though, that it just became clear that if I was going to work, I had to really love what I was doing. And I just did not love academia the way that I saw some of my colleagues from grad school, like just really loving it, loving the sort of, it's a little hard for me to say thrill of grant seeking, but, you know, they were in it. They were in the game. They were in it. And I just didn't feel that. So I decided it was time to go.
And my understanding is it can be a very grueling place for women and particularly moms, newer moms especially. So I'm sure that played in as well.
Yes, I have these terrible memories of, you know, there was no, like the nursing room, when I was working at my MIT lab, I would have to pack all my stuff and walk 20 minutes across campus. So obviously I wasn't going to do that when I had to pump. And so I would be squatting in this single unit bathroom with like people knocking on the door while I was trying to pump. And there was, you know, the toilet didn't have a seat. So I'd just be squatting near the outlet. And it was just, the whole thing was it was not great.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So how does one make the leap though, from that kind of career to where you wound up? I mean, that's not like,
that's not a, it's not a logical move, really. It's not like you had a little tendril of that kind of work in your day to day and you just kind of made the leap over. You had to do something completely different.
Yeah. Well, the thread was that, so while I was doing, still in my postdoc, I was in, you know, my last year, and it was a 3-year grant, and I had become a parent, and, you know, I had several friends who were all having babies at the same time, and people would routinely say, ask me for advice about things, or because they knew I researched things ad nauseum. I was a researcher that carried over into my parenting. So when it, whether it was gear or whatever. And at one point I was like, wow, I really, you know, I wish there was like a place like online that I could put all this stuff.
You know, like some this kind of like, you know, HTML based. I don't know. Yeah.
I don't know. And I was talking to a tech friend. This is 2006. And he said, you need a blog. And I literally said, I don't know what that is.
Oh, my gosh.
So I remember him. I remember we were this all happening. He told me about a platform called Movable Type and he helped download the software. I know.
That was TypePad, right?
So it, yes.
If that was like then, all the rage. That was so much cooler than WordPress for a while.
It was so hip.
Yes.
It was so hip. Yes. And so I started it and then, you know, like it happens on the internet, like all of a sudden people were reading it and it kind of took off.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't, but it wasn't making any money by the time I left academia. You know, it had just, it had started. The reception was like really great. And, but I got to a point with my postdoc where I was like, I'm out of here. Like I, it was so stressful and I had a really like complicated, difficult relationship with my advisor. And I was like, I would like my hair was falling out and my husband was like, you got to jump. Like, this is the time. I have a job right now. I'll like, you know, see things through financially for the time being until you get your footing. And I was like, great, I'm out.
Yeah.
So that was the jump. It was related research wise, but obviously totally different content wise.
Okay. So what was the content of this original blog that you had?
Oh, geez. Yes. So Boston Mamas, it's my very first internet property.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure because I didn't know if you slipped another one in there, you know.
That, no, that was that was it. I mean, it's still going today. Oh my gosh. Like all these years later. And I, you know, I think I've realized over time that the real thread that runs through everything I've pursued is one, I kind of want to fill a hole where I'm looking for something and I don't see the thing there. So I create the thing that I want to see. And then two, I just want to like help people. And I know that sounds kind of basic, but I just wanted to collect information. I didn't want to be a calendar site because there were a million of those in the city, but I wanted like a lifestyle portal, like something that could be fun and interesting and intellectual and also silly sometimes. And, you know, I think people felt that need because it really took off. So that was the very beginning property.
Wow. Okay. So fast forward 15 years and it was an overnight success. You had amazing money coming in and you rode off into the sunset or something else happened. Something else happened,
a
right?
A lot of things happened.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, well, so, it, you know, the one of the very formative, interesting things that happened that isn't like, I don't often talk about it mostly just because there were many other sexier things to talk about. But, you know, I think there is really something too, as people are thinking about reinvention and career change, there's something about needing to make space in order for something else to happen. And that's a little terrifying for people.
Yes.
I mean, really. And I already said just a moment ago that my husband had given me that safety net of saying, I got you, you know, like while you're making this jump. But I think I had to do that in order, because by the time I left academia, you know, the blog was taking off, but it wasn't like I was rolling in money. I couldn't sustain myself on that. But right after I quit and left academia, I got my first sort of freelance editing job, actually from the Journal of Music Perception, which I still work on to this day, which is crazy. It's just this kind of like little side. It's just this little side project that I work on, but it like throws off a decent amount of cash. And so I just kind of keep it going. But I wouldn't have been able to do that if I hadn't left and said, okay, I'm leaving. And now there's the space for this other thing to come in. You know,
it's
but
not
after
just the
that,
time, it's the mental space too, right? Like the energy that you can put around something.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And then, you know, since that time, I became like a serial project starter. You know, I don't know if we knew each other back way back when, but my second property was actually a digital design business. Well, paper too, but it was called Posh Peacock. I started a design shop.
I do remember like, Posh Peacock. Yes, I remember that.
Oh my gosh, that was so long ago. And, you know, then I wrote a book with Asha Dornfest called Minimalist Parenting. And then we started the podcast. And then I started another podcast with my husband last year. And actually, before
and you have
that,
another design company in there as well. I can't remember the timing.
Yes, Brave New World Designs. Yes. Yes. So I just have started a lot of things. Also, a major amount of my time these days is taken up with sort of bigger picture social media consulting. I serve as the creative director at an agency called Women Online, and we do all these amazing like social media for social good type projects. Mm-hmm. And I work with like just the most incredible team of women there. And all of that, like it just all kind of like one thing fell after another. But my big issue is I haven't really let go of a lot of the things.
Well, so what I was going to actually say is, okay, so, you know, you do start a lot of things. You are a project starter. But I think what's really unique about you is that you're also, I'm not going to say a finisher, because maybe you can't finish. Maybe that's part of your problem. Like, maybe, like, you hang on because you don't want it to be done. But you don't seem like one of those people who flits around and kind of half-asses stuff and starts it and, like, doesn't get it off the ground and then starts the next thing. Like when you do something, it seems very intentional and like you really do it. And I'm wondering if it's because you're doing things sequentially and giving it time to percolate. Like what's happening behind the scenes that allows you to have not just the energy to start, but then the endurance and longevity to keep the thing going and get some critical mass behind it?
Hmm. Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think that a lot of the work that I do, well, so I will say my husband and I often joke that I'm like the entrepreneur without the business plan. Like I never have a business plan for anything I'm working on. Actually, that's one thing I love about you too, Megan. I feel like you just go for it. You have an idea, you go for it. And I think that is, I've always been more of a gut person. Mm-hmm. So, you know, various things that I've started, like when I had the gut feeling about minimalist parenting and brought it to Asha, I just felt like there was this need for a different type of conversation, and I felt really passionately about it. And so I followed that. Same thing with the podcast, with Edit Your Life. After that, I just felt like, well, you know, the book was great, and I think this is a broader conversation beyond parenting. I think we should keep having that conversation. What do you think about a podcast? Mm-hmm. And certainly, you know, Brave New World, we were responding to the 2016 election. We wanted to be able to, you know, create a product where we could also donate, you know, part of the sales. So everything has, these different projects have sort of come out of different moments and feelings and tides that I've felt in sort of the community of humans that I communicate with. Mm-hmm. And I think there's really something to that, like feeling, doing things that help people feel a little bit more seen and heard in the world. I think that's been a big part of what I do.
And that passion behind it, I think, gives you the energy to find time, to make time that might not otherwise exist. Like dragging yourself into something you don't feel stoked about eats up a lot more energy, and it eats up more time because you're literally like having to warm up every time, you know, every time you want to get started on it. You touched on two things that I think are really important to unpack here. If anybody is listening to this and thinking, I really want to be a starter, I want to be someone who gets things off the ground and gets going and doesn't hesitate. I think one thing that's probably a common thread with both of us is that, and I know we're going to dive into this a little bit later about the how long it takes for things to actually happen, but it may look, and I've told people this before, it probably looks like I'm just having an idea and jumping, but often it's years of letting an idea marinate, years. Like, and sometimes it's like a mini false start, and then I'm like, I wasn't really ready. And then I kind of like, before I get too pot committed, I like kind of pull my hand back. Like there's, And there's this dance that I've gotten comfortable with now in my 40s that even in my 30s, I still wasn't really comfortable with because I felt like if I didn't do it right now, it wasn't going to happen. I was going to miss the boat and there wouldn't be another chance. And so I would love to hear if you feel like the reason you're able to start and finish, like jump in and do it, but also keep it going, is partly because you're not jumping on something unless you mean it.
Yeah. I tune into my gut a lot. So that's a big part of it. If I feel it really strongly in my gut, I'm like, I just got to go for it. And then the other joke, I mean, Asha Dornfest, my podcast and book kind of co-host, co-author, and I joke about this, but we call it, you know, Christine Coe time, because because when I get an idea, if I'm excited about it, I make things happen.
Yes.
Really fast. And that's just who I am. And that's how I work. You know, when my husband and I were talking about, you know, when the 2016 election happened, we had a conversation about what to do, how to channel our feelings. And in 3 weeks, we started that shop, which is crazy. I mean, that's like creating all the creative, all the digital design, photographing things, putting the products out. I mean, that was crazy. I probably wouldn't recommend that, like, in general.
Right.
It's a pretty short timeline. But if you're feeling it, like, we were feeling that project, and that was awesome.
Well, and you're not doing that all the time. Like, that was a, like, one moment. It was like your moment to act, you know? It's not like you're working round the clock every single day all year round. Or if you are, maybe you've learned how to take rest. Like, for me, my energy spikes are usually then kind of accompanied on either side by a big dip where I kind of like get my breath again. And I think that works.
Yeah.
Whereas just kind of like pushing at that breakneck speed all year round, you'd have so much going on in Christine Coe time, you'd have an unmanageable size project load.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, two other important pieces to mention are, one, you know, working with or hiring really great people to help do stuff. So, you know, the assistants that I work with to help me get things done are amazing. And then the other thing is that, you know, sometimes projects need to, if you've been doing something for a while, they need to like evolve and change. So we started Brave New World Designs in 2016. We were producing, let's just say I was producing everything in-house, like in my design studio. So whenever we had a crazy product that took off, it was insanity around here. And from the very beginning, my husband had been saying, we got to outsource this. We got to outsource production. This is crazy. We can't do this. And I'm like, I'm too much of a control freak. I need to like, I need to see all this stuff going out the door. Finally, this past year, I was like, okay, I'm with you.
Yeah.
Let's outsource. And then once we finally, you know, migrated to outsource production, I was like, wow, why didn't we do this earlier?
So, yeah,
I think, you know, you have to build in some flexibility if you're a starter type person. And if you like to keep the projects going, just because, you know, you're only one person.
Yes. Right?
So,
and you might be able to put that crazy energy in right at the beginning to get it up. But at some point, there have to be more than one executionist. There has to be more than one person, you know, who is able and empowered to help keep it going.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The other thing that I thought of when you were mentioning all these things that you've started and that you still have kind of going is, I think another thing to kind of point out is, when you've got a large body of active projects, they're not all the same amount of active all at the same time. And I think the internet can make that like a little bit of smoke and mirrors, which can really work to a creative person's advantage, because it can look like something is much more active than it actually is. And I think that's just important to keep in mind, that just because we, you know, someone who's got a lot going on might have a dozen things that are technically active, they're not all equally active all the time.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. Of course.
Yeah. So you're kind of like, you're keeping the fires burning as they need to, but sometimes you can pull back from things and so you can push into something else.
Yeah. And I think it's, you know, one thing to point out, you know, for anybody who's starting their own thing, is you got to remember that if it's your project, it's your project. You know, I remember when at one point, you know, Asha and I run our podcast year round, just, you know, the way you do the Mom Hour. And at one point we were like, wait, during the summer, we could go every other week and that would be fine. And we're like, yeah, we drive this bus. Why not?
We get to we're the deciders. We get to decide, right? So,
I think it's hard to remember that when you're sort of mired in the details.
Especially when you're looking at the way other people do things sometimes as the,
of course,
as the, you know, barometer for how it should be done. Well, this is the internet. There's no such thing as the should. There's no should be done, because we're all making it up as we go along. Yeah. Okay, Christine, I am loving this conversation, but let's take a quick break to talk about our sponsors and then we'll be back with more. Sometimes when you're going through a big transition, small symbols can mean so much. A few years ago, when I was feeling really weird about the missing wedding ring on my left hand, I decided to get a ring for my right hand. The ring I chose came from our sponsor, Ana Luisa, and I've worn it almost every day for the past 3 years. I love having a piece of jewelry that is really just a commitment to me and to my own happiness and goals. Ana Luisa, that's A-N-A-L-U-I-S-A, makes high quality jewelry at really fair prices, starting at just $39. And all their pieces are so well made and pretty. They have a great variety of styles. Right now, Ana Luisa has an amazing Mother's Day deal, 15% off any of their products. This would be a great way to show appreciation to your mom, but also maybe just to gift yourself with something nice. I am loving the mini Abby hoop earrings. They're dainty but substantial, and they kind of hug the earlobe, and they've become a big part of my workout slash business wardrobe. So here's what I do. I just throw a cardigan over my yoga clothes. I put these earrings on, and I feel like I totally look ready for a Zoom call. And with that 15% off deal, you can get the mini Abby earrings or anything else you're loving from Ana Luisa's great selection at such a deal. New jewelry collections are released every Friday, so you always have fresh styles to choose from. If you're hoping to get your pieces in time for Mother's Day, make sure you put in your order by Wednesday, May 5th to guarantee shipping by Mother's Day in the U.S. And to get that 15% off deal, you're going to go to analuisa.com/MORMD. And that link is right in the show description, wherever you're listening now. So check it out. Again, that's analuisa.com/MOR for Mother of Reinvention, MD, for 15% off before Mother's Day. Friends, I am ready for summer shoes, and Vionic shoes is making me that much more excited for those new summer styles. I have been wearing Vionic shoes for about a year now, and I just can't get over how ridiculously comfortable this footwear is. I just got a pair of their Amy Wedges, and these are really sexy shoes, but without the not-so-sexy foot cramps and toe pain that usually accompany any kind of heels for me. Vionic offers three-zone comfort with stability, cushioning, and amazing arch support. And that's why every pair of Vionics I put on feels so good, even these cute and comfy Vionic wedges. There's a 30-day wear test, so you can return for a full refund within 30 days if you aren't satisfied for any reason, even if you've worn them outside. Go to Vionic Shoes and use promo code MOR, that's Mother of Reinvention, M-O-R, to get free shipping on your pair of Vionics. Again, that's VionicShoes.com and use the promo code MOR for free shipping. Okay, back to my conversation with Christine Coe.
So you've had this, you know, very diverse internet-based career that took you far, far away from academia. But this last, just like in the last few months, you kind of took back your title and renamed yourself on Instagram, Dr. Christine Coe, from, I believe you were Boston Mamas before, right?
I was, yes, and then okay. I was Hello Christine Coe.
Yes,
and
okay.
Then, yeah, yeah. So I, you know, it's interesting because I was just texting with Asha Dornfest about this the other day. We were joking about it, but, you know, when I started on Twitter and Instagram and everything, I was really squarely identified as Boston Mamas, my yeah. very first internet property. And along the way, I'd had some people say, like, you're kind of more than that. Like yeah. you want to keep using that handle, but it just felt so hard to change it.
Like, and isn't it like something hard, to hide you know? Behind a little bit? It's like, it's bigger than me. It's this thing that I get to like, I don't know. Yeah. The hiding behind is the wrong word, but it like gives me credibility. But you
just
need that.
It just felt hard. And like starting more handles felt yeah. hard. And then, but then I started to really wrestle with it because, you know, over the last, I don't know, maybe 5 or so years, especially as my projects really got diversified, I was like, this doesn't even make sense.
Right.
But I struggled, you know, Christine Coe, just Christine Coe was taken. Like that would have been the obvious choice. And so I went around and around and I was probably like just so annoying to various people asking them again and again what they thought.
I did the same
and
thing.
And so
by
I
the
think,
way.
I know, I think like last year, probably I came up with Hello Christine Coe, which was like, okay. And actually Dr. Christine Coe was part of the conversation, but I felt deeply uncomfortable with using that because I didn't want to feel like I was trying to sell myself as something that I don't actively, you know, I'm not a professor anymore. Like I'm not doing that. So I felt kind of like weird about it. And then after, you know, the recent election, you know, listeners might remember that there was some really nasty stuff that came out against Jill Biden about how her honorific and her use of the word of the title doctor was not appropriate.
I remember that reading just, like, one article that was so condescending and gross.
It was so condescending.
Yes.
And I just got my like feminist, you know, marbles. I got like all fired up. And so I just, it was so funny because I had, for years, I had been like laboring over my handle change. And that in like 5 minutes, I changed my Twitter, professional Facebook, and Instagram to Dr. Christine Koh. And I'm like, boom.
It just solidified it.
This like, is just,
it was one of those decisions that was years in the making, but took us, you know, 30 seconds to actually make when it had to happen.
I know. Yeah. I know. And now it's just, now I love it because it's so easy and I don't push it on anybody. But now, you know, it's funny, the various interviews I've done over the past, you know, several months, everybody's always referring to me as Dr. Christine Koh, which is hilarious because I never ask people to do that. They just
right.
do it.
So it's part of your, it's right there in your name. So
I guess, yeah. I guess.
And probably like the more you hear that or the more you see it used, the more you get comfortable with the fact that that is who you are. And that is like, that is your education. And that's a big part of what your expertise and like you get to own that, you know,
I earned it.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, and I'll link up your Instagram post in the show notes because I mean it was great. It was like the perfect kind of channeling your rage.
I was channeling my rage in a very like academic, I hope eloquent way.
Yes.
It was very funny.
And I like that you embraced your name. It's funny, I had a conversation with you. I want to say maybe back in the spring, and I was just wringing my hands because I wanted to get back into personal blogging and I just couldn't decide what to do about my name. And you were like, well, why wouldn't you just blog under Megan Francis? And I was like, no. It has to have a title. It has to be a thing. And then I remembered that that was the exact advice I used to give people all the time. Like, well, you'll always be you. You're always going to be Dr. Christine Koh, no matter what projects you're doing. That doesn't change. But I couldn't take my own advice. And I finally did. So even though the podcast is Mother of Reinvention, the website where I'm hosting it is just meganfrancis.com, which I've owned since 2002.
That is fabulous.
So I just love, it feels like such a like a reclamation. And I love that. I love reclaiming what's yours that you earned.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. So lately, Christine, you have been all over the place. Like your byline has been
everywhere. I've been like too much in people's faces.
You know
probably,
what? You're overexposed.
There it is.
It's over. No, I'm kidding. And one of them was a very personal, a very personal win for you as a Boston mama and Boston writer and professional. Uh-huh. So tell us about, because that doesn't just happen. And we've both now been in the world of getting those big bylines and getting your writing seen as legitimate and publishable by those publications, those outlets. That is it's not something you just do like here and there. It doesn't just happen.
No.
It takes some intention. So tell us about that and where you see that taking you.
Yeah, well, I will be, you know me, I'm always about the real talk. So I will be totally blunt and say that, you know, I've been freelance and doing my own thing for almost 15 years. I've always wanted sort of a major media byline, but I didn't really like put any effort into it. I just wanted somebody to ask me and like invite me.
It doesn't happen usually.
Which is rather... No, it does not happen. And it's rather, I'm losing the word, but it's a little like lazy, honestly. And so, and expecting a lot. So
presumptuous, was that the word you were looking for?
Yes.
Okay.
Presumptuous, just
not
something.
Calling you presumptuous, but I think that was maybe the word you were grasping for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had always wanted one. I just wanted somebody to invite me.
Yeah.
And of course, like, why would that even happen? There are so many amazing writers in the world who are actively pitching.
And they might not realize that you even want that. Like, I think sometimes when we don't ask, it's that other people don't realize that that's a thing we would even want to do anyway. Like, you really got to put yourself out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so at the end of 2020, I was sort of honestly dreading the end of the year because I felt like it was sort of reckoning time for me professionally because I had actually, during the height of the pandemic, like in the first 3 months, I had written a book. Like I had written an Edit Your Life book and it had gone nowhere, like absolutely nowhere. So I was feeling sort of crappy about that. And I had a couple of agents, especially who were really quite like not great to me. And so my confidence was kind of like messed up. And so I had to decide what I was going to do about it. So ultimately I decided, you know what? I'm going to put the book in a parking lot. I'm going to be okay with that. Like, I don't even feel like I want to write that right now. And so that was a big deal. And then I said to myself, you know, what I want to do is be really intentional about refining what I have, because I already have a lot of projects, And then the only thing I'm going to add is to devote some intent, you know, to create this intention about this byline thing that I've been talking about for 15 years, but never done anything about. And I'm going to actually put some dedicated attention. I'm going to like ask a couple of writer friends, like, how does one pitch? Like, I knew nothing, absolutely nothing. And so I decided to start. I learned things like sometimes you actually have to write the full thing and pitch it before you, like, I didn't even know that. So I had a really strong idea right after the new year for an article I wanted to write. And so I had to be like really vulnerable and I had to ask for help. So I decided I'm going to write this thing. And then I'm going to ask a trusted colleague, you know, if she'd be willing to read it. And only if they thought it was good, would they be willing to reach out to their editor at the Washington Post. I mean, this was like, I felt like that was kind of a big ask personally.
Yeah. Yeah.
It turned out she thought the piece was great. She had like one little minor suggestion, made the introduction, and then like the editor loved it. And nice. So I got that piece. And then while I was working on the edits for that piece, the Boston Globe magazine reached out to me. I finally got that coveted like invite.
Yes.
But I feel like the universe only gave it to me because I had actually started putting attention into my intentions about it.
Right.
And yeah. And then, so it's just taken off. And then actually, you know, CNN actually invited, like they reached out to ask me to write a piece in the wake of the Atlanta shootings, and you know, anti-Asian American racism. So it's just kind of taken off. It's been crazy. Like nothing. I actually had a goal. I said to myself, I would like, I don't want to be greedy with my new goal. So, or like set myself up for failure. So my goal was to have one major byline in 2021.
Okay.
And now that's been, I think that's, it's now going to be 4 or 5 or something.
And by, it's, by, I mean, 2021 quarter. Isn't over yet. We still got a lot of months ahead. And I think what's so interesting about that is you did get asked, but you had to ask first. Like the asking happened, but you had to really like first set the groundwork and create that momentum. And the momentum is really the big piece of the puzzle, I think, that gets missed. Like these things don't happen like one and then, you know, one. And it's not all evenly spaced out over a year. It's often more like a flurry of opportunities that all kind of like tumble over each other in a kind of a short time frame, and that momentum really gets you going, but you have to ask first. And then once you kind of get the wheels going, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, you do. And I think that it's really hard for people, I think women especially, to ask for help. And so, and it's definitely never been my strong suit. Like I'm always the person who I figure it out myself. Sometimes I get really annoyed when people ask me for things that you could just Google, like, you know, but in this case, I couldn't really Google it. It was this like mysterious void to me.
Right.
So I think, you know, I just want to point out that vulnerability is a really important piece of reinvention and figuring out what you want to do next. So it's a really huge part of the story, I think.
And you'd be amazed when everybody is so busy and people have their, not intentionally, but people have their blinders on to what's right in front of them sometimes. And it wouldn't necessarily occur to someone to think, man, I know this editor who's actively looking for pitches. And I know Christine Coe, she's a great writer who's been waiting for her big break. Like people aren't probably going to put those two things together, even if they love you, even if you talk to them every day, like they just might not think about it. And asking and putting yourself on the radar just gets like, it can just open the floodgates of opportunities that you wouldn't even know.
Yes. Because I mean, that actually loops back to when I started doing consulting work because you know, back then I had been thinking, okay, you know, I'm making at least as much as I made as a postdoc, which isn't that much, like based on my freelance and Boston Mamas. But I was like, I really should be making more money and I would like to be making more money. And so I decided, I was like, okay, I would like to do some consulting, but I have to put some feelers out there to let people know I'm looking, because otherwise everybody always assumes everybody else is busy.
Yes.
And if they don't know that you're looking, they're not going to ask. And so I told a couple people, one person who like runs a PR firm and then another person, a friend who had has a consulting firm. And I said, just to let you know, I'm like looking. And I got two job offers in like a week. And, you know, one of them was you know, is Maura Ahrens-Mealy, who I work with at Women Online. And I mean, the rest is history, but I had to put myself out there, which again, vulnerability, very scary, feels like a little like, ah,
yeah.
But it's crucial. People need to know that you're looking for something.
Yeah, they do. Well, I want to shift gears a little bit, Christine. Like me, you are in your 40s. You can name your age if you'd like, but I was surprised when I found out how old you were because I always thought you were younger than that because you look great.
Oh, well, I'm 47. I'm 47 and it's because Asians don't age. My mom is 84 and still like half of her hair is black. Like,
okay. Well, that is not the case for us like Scandinavian British Isles. Everything starts to droop and the bone structure does not hold things in place and it all falls apart very quickly. Basically, everyone in my family ends up looking like a giant toddler by the end of their lives and like and a giant like
giant
asexual toddler too. Like there's no gender
or
apparent sex. So, like my dad and my grandma looked exactly the same. Anyway, so all that said, you look fantastic, but I know that you've also been really health conscious. Over the years. And I think
the struggle in the 40s is no joke.
It's no joke. And I see you as someone, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I see you as someone who's probably tends toward a little hard on yourself about things and maybe your performance not being as easy as it was in your 20s and 30s. You know, just to go out and run probably doesn't feel the way it did then or whatever other exercises you're doing. So talk about that transition and like being compassionate with yourself. And because I do feel like you've done some writing about that over the past, I don't know, six months to a year about really just kind of embracing where you are now. And I think that's such a common through line for women in their 40s or maybe going into their 50s. Like, oh, I see. I can't just do to my body what I used to do and expect it to just, you know, whip into shape and perform for me. Now, what am I going to do?
Yes. I mean, I think our female expectations, especially around what our bodies should do or should look like, is just like from another planet. Like, I don't even understand it. I mean, especially after having children. I mean, this like you've done this crazy, amazing thing. And, you know, people or we expect ourselves to bounce back immediately. It's ridiculous. But, you know, specifically from a self-care standpoint, I think it's so important to evaluate where you are, what actually feels good, you know, what feels nourishing. You know, as you mentioned, I used to run and I was a kind of like a late learned how to run as an adult runner. But for a while it felt wonderful. Like I ran half marathons willingly. They didn't
like a bear wasn't chasing you for 13.2 miles.
Yes, I was. I actually paid money to run 13.1 miles.
13.1,
So, I mean, it's kind of ridiculous. Anyway, and then at some point, it started to feel terrible, and I kept trying to do it. And then I was like, what am I doing? So I think part of, you know, it takes some, like, listening and tuning in to do that, and then self-acceptance to be like, okay, the things that used to feel me and feel great and serve me in my 30s are not going to be the same in my 40s. They're not going to be the same in my 50s. Like, and I have to be okay with that. And so now, like, you know, tennis in the spring, skiing in the summer is kind of my thing. I mean, skiing in the
skiing
winter.
In the summer. Water skiing?
although that has not happened this winter with the pandemic.
Yeah.
But most immediately, since I'm really not doing either of those things right this second, like, yoga has been my jam. And we're talking, you know, everybody's busy. I'm tremendously busy, especially during the work weeks. I'm talking like 10 minutes a day sometimes. Yeah. Very doable.
Yeah.
I'm all about
it. But it makes
doable.
A big difference. And not only just like your flexibility and all that, but I've found that if I'm practicing yoga regularly, I can get back into that breathing pattern faster and I can draw on it in other stressful times. So it's like it really is an all over practice. It's not just like get it done and the 10 minutes has to count for the whole day. It's like a whole life difference. Yeah.
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 It's huge. And I will say also, you know, I had a big thing probably a couple of years ago, I think it was, where I just realized like all of my joints were hurting, like my allergies were off the hook. I mean, it was really miserable. And I had to kind of like, it's almost like when you have a kid who has food allergies and you have to do this elimination thing and try taking all these things out and then adding them back in. I basically had to do that with my nutrition, which was like super sad in some ways because I'm somebody who loves baking. I bake like recreationally. I love making cakes and all these things. And I realized all of a sudden my body was not processing things like sugar and gluten and other things the way it used to.
Yeah.
So I had to change things up. So I think, you know, I do think that being more aware of how your body feels and how it reacts to things is a really good thing. And it probably like will bring up some feelings because like I think aging is hard for humans in general, even though it shouldn't be because that's part of, you know, that's just part of the
part of the game. Yeah. And I can see the sadness because it's like every time you eliminate one thing to test, there's a chance that thing is not coming back, at least not without some repercussions. Yeah. And that's hard. Like, and, and letting go of that idea that you can just eat whatever you want or those things that bring you pleasure that you might have to like replace them with something else or find something new.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's hard.
In case anybody's wondering, carrot sticks and almonds, I've never found as an awesome substitution, satisfying substitution for like chips.
No,
let's be real.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you brought up a good point earlier about our expectations for ourselves. And while I definitely don't want to go back to like the 30s or something, it is interesting to think about how different the expectations of us would be in a different time. Like not that long ago, we'd be wearing our hair in a bun by now and wearing like baggy dresses that cover our bodies. Like the expectations, it's great to have the freedom and to be able to decide this is how I want to dress. This is how I want to look. I'm not going like out so soon and I can still be stylish and all that. But like the unintended consequence is then it's like, okay, so since I can still look, you know, relatively young and stay stylish, and does that mean I must? And what should that look like? So I think a lot of us are kind of grappling with that right now.
Yeah. I mean, certainly, I mean, especially with the pandemic and, you know, not knowing whether it's even worth it to get out of your sweatpants. But I will say to that point is that one of the great things about aging is that I feel like I have found my sort of sense of style and what I like and what, you know, what feels good. I have become really tuned into that. And I feel actually like I'm like, I look way better now than I did like 20 years ago.
Honestly, so do I. I look at pictures of myself as a young mom and I'm like, oof. honey. Oh, goodness.
That's a great part of it. Like, that's a great part of aging to embrace is that you're going to figure out what feels great for you. And that's an awesome thing.
And you always look very stylish. And I have to say that there's been a fun little
sweater blazer. Megan.
Yes. Okay.
It's always been the sweater blazer.
Fun little exchange going on between you and Sarah Powers, my co-host at the Mom Hour, who bought a sweater blazer on your recommendation and likes to post pictures about it and tag you and how it's changed her style game. Well, you look fabulous. Yeah. And now I need one. Then we can just like have like a, you know, three of us in a shot. Maybe we can get Asha in there too.
And oh my gosh, like that would be amazing. I literally just bought my fourth one.
Okay. All right. When we get off of this call, I'm going to look it up and get myself one because it does look like the kind of thing you can take your, I call it bizletic wear. So that's like, it's not athleisure because the choice isn't between working out or laying around. The choice is between business and working out. So you have to be dressed that you could do either at any time. So like if you have yoga pants and, you know, your yoga tank and your sports bra on, but then you throw a sweater blazer over the top, you are fully bizletic.
You just look cute all of a sudden. Yeah. You're just ready.
Just take it off before you run or work out, I think probably. Yeah. But well, Christine, I want to wrap this up by touching on a theme that I've been asking everybody about for this first season. And I feel like this is the big word of the pandemic year has been resilience. I think it's been used in a throwaway, like, oh, kids are resilient or we're all developing resilience. And what does that even mean? But I want to kind of explore resilience through the lens of reinvention, because I think the more you get comfortable with reinventing yourself and your career and everything else, the more that leads to just kind of like that muscle memory of resilience.
Yep.
So I would love to hear your thoughts on that and how that's played out for you.
Yeah. Well, you know, Megan, not just because we're on this call together, but I will say that I have used you as an example many times when I've talked about people who I admire professionally, because one thing that I've always observed about you, and I think it has probably helped me be braver in my different pursuits, is I feel like you are fearless in throwing stuff at the wall to see what sticks. So when I think about reinvention and resilience, I think about being okay just trying stuff and seeing what works, seeing what sticks and resonates, not only for a potential audience, but for yourself. You know, you might have an idea. You know, I got really hung up on this idea of this Edit Your Life book, invested a bunch of money in a book coach, did the whole thing, and then it didn't work. And I could have been stuck there for a long time, but I was like, you know what? Like, I could circle around to this later. I might not, but I'm going to just go with something else that really means a lot to me right now. And I think that is so important. I mean, it's something we talk about, trying to teach our kids to like not be afraid of making mistakes and to get up again. And that's what we need to do with our professional work too. We have to like, you know, try stuff, be okay letting go of things that don't end up being great for us or working out, and to not give up. We got to just keep trying.
Yeah. And I would argue that we can pull that through into everything. Like hobbies, passions, health and fitness journeys, relationships, like they're taking those risks. Like they're calculated risks. It's not like I'm not necessarily, again, if you saw what was going on in my mind and like the 99 things out of 100 that I don't move forward with, you'd be like a little bit relieved that I can do that. But yeah, like that's very flattering. Thank you for saying that. But I do just think that there's, the more you do it, the more you get used to like, oh, that didn't work out. And that's okay. I didn't die. Like I will live another day and to have another idea. And I used to tell people all the time, and I haven't thought about this in a while, but I used to tell people to have a do later and a do never list. And so sometimes the thing that feels like you have to do it now, but you're just running up against a wall, maybe it's not the right time and it can go on your do later list. Maybe that's the book for you. And then sometimes after a while, you're like, I'm moving this to the do never list. And it doesn't have to even, it's like, you don't have to write it down. You're not committing to it, but it's kind of like there are things that just naturally slip down. Yeah. They slip down.
They slip because you don't care about them.
Exactly. Right. Like you tried that thing and you know, you hired the book coach and you, you know, I'm sure wrote a proposal and you said you circulated a proposal, right? So you've got so much of the bones of this thing done. If it's meant to get bumped back onto your do now list, it'll happen, but maybe it'll just kind of fade away. And that's okay too. Like those things happen.
It is totally okay. And honestly, you know, as you and Sarah know, I'm wed to my to-do list and my to-do app. And honestly, when I decided to put the book in the parking lot and started taking all of those to-do items and taking the dates off of them, I just felt like my creativity go into overdrive. And I was like, I'm excited to write again, you know? And that is what fueled sort of the all the bylines is I've just felt energized to write and to share. And so sometimes we do need to move those things to like a do later or do never list in order to let other things fly. And I think that's very important to keep in mind.
I love it. Well, I will definitely link to some of your bylines and some of those big stories that you've recently published in the show notes for this episode. And Christine, thank you so much for being on this episode with me. It's just been great talking with you, catching up with you. And I can't wait to see where this intention takes you.
Oh, thanks, Megan. I always love talking to you. You're such a joy, and I really am grateful that you've been in my life all these years.
Well, thanks everyone for listening to this episode of Mother of Reinvention. Like always, everything from today's episode will be in the show notes at motherofreinventionshow.com. Again, don't forget to check out Prep Dish, and for a free 2-week trial, go to prepdish.com/MOR. Again, just head to prepdish.com/more, MOR, to try Prep Dish free for 2 weeks. If you'd like to drop me a line, I'm at motherofreinventionshow@gmail.com, and I'm so appreciating all the great reviews and ratings. Please keep it up. I'll talk to you next Thursday.